Today is August 10th, 2016, and this is episode number 372 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am known for my ability to titivate well.
You are a master titivator. Oh, you have more to say.
I do. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@MacObserver.com.
Like I was saying, you really are a master titivator.
I am a master titivator. It's my new favorite word.
Yeah, you know, we need to put that on your business card.
We can say it on a family-friendly show.
We can.
But it feels like we shouldn't. So it just makes it like naughty. Naughty, delicious.
I know.
Naughty and delicious.
Do you want to see how I titivate?
Sure.
Yeah. I can give you pictures.
You can. Why don't you post them on Instagram?
I can do that, too.
At Jay Gamet, right?
At Jay Gamet, yes. You're on Instagram, aren't you?
I am, but I don't think I've ever posted any proof of...
of your titivation?
My titivation skills.
Well, you can.
I could. Yeah. Anyway, TM O'Brien. No, what is it? Geektels. GEEKTELLS. Geektels.
I can see why you would be confused, because you do have a different Twitter and Instagram name.
Yeah, I didn't have a comprehensive strategy for my social media. For my social media platform things. And I'm also distracted by the fact that there could be a fire about a quarter of a mile from my house.
Ooh, that's not good.
Can't quite see what's going on. There's a lot of smoke where there's never smoke.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
And I just saw this just now. So, you know, it's like, you know, squirrel.
Yeah, well, you know, in this case, burning squirrel.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So why don't we jump into it? We've got the thing.
Yeah. Which thing is that, Brian?
We've got the Samsung thing. Let's just start with the Samsung thing.
I'm totally in.
So researchers at DEF CON demonstrated the ability to intercept transaction token from Samsung Pay's Stripe reading nonsense that they do.
So hold on, let me see if I've got this straight. Hackers hacked the swiping credit card simulator thing that Samsung has built into their smartphones.
Right. So let's back up. Stripe readers, magnetic Stripe readers. That's what credit cards have used for the last couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't used to, of course. Remember the kakunka.
Oh, that was the most awesome thing, Brian, right there.
Kakunka. You kind of wanted to be the guy that was working at the restaurant, and then someone came up with the credit card, and you got to. You got to do the kakunka thing?
You know, I was that guy. Not in a restaurant. It was in a gas station.
Yeah, sure. Well, wherever. Yeah. If there was any kind of cashier.
Have all the little levers. So you could put the right value in for the transaction. And then
just
kakunka. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah. Good times. And then the business would save those up and then send them in once a week or so, right? I don't even know.
Well, they would get
sent to the bank.
Yeah, they'd get sent to the bank each night, because you know you take all the day's income and you make your nightly deposit, and so all the credit card transactions would go with that. The part that I thought was funny was when they switched to having the carbonless thing. You know, so the carbon was actually on the back side of the sheet.
Yeah, you're like, each transaction is wasting two sheets of carbon.
Right.
Because there were three layers.
Right. And the carbon had your signature and your credit card number on it. So I remember there were people that you'd do a transaction and they'd say, give me the carbons. Okay, no problem. And then when they switched, so you didn't have the separate sheet, and the carbon was on the back of the of each page in the form. Right. Man, those people would freak out. I demand you give me the carbon. You're showing them, look, there's nothing here to give you. I want that carbon anyhow. Good times.
This blast from the past was brought to you by Old Men. Old Men, because yesterday was awesome.
That's right. Kakunka. Kakunka.
Kakunka. So anyway, that was replaced eventually by magnetic readers. Actually, I think there was a while when you would actually punch everything into the terminal. So you'd punch in the credit card number, and then you punch in the amount of the transaction.
Yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, did that too. But that didn't last very long. We went to the magnetic stripe readers, where the credit card information would be embedded in that little black strip that's on the back of your credit card, and then mm-hmm. you run that through the machine. And what's happening there is that there are magnets in the the card reader that are getting that information from that magnetic stripe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we did for a long time, but that has become increasingly less secure.
Right.
So in recent years, Europe was a little ahead of us here, and then the United States is doing it too. We're doing some kind of combination between, well, there's chip and pen, there's chip and sign. That's what we do here, right? Chip and sign.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a miserable system, right? It's slow. It's already been hacked in a couple of places.
Yep.
Damon pointed that out in our reader comments. Curmudgeonly Damon. Or Demon. Damon.
Demon. Which do you want to call him, and I'll call him the other, and that way we've got our bases covered.
Oh, we got it covered. I'm gonna flip, and you just flip too. You just take the opposite, whatever I take. He's okay. Been with us for a long time. He's not my biggest fan, but he's super smart, and I always look forward to what he has to say. He was being critical about chip and pen and chip and sign being not very secure. He's right, and it's also slow and it's miserable. Just slow, 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 slow. I cannot believe how long those transactions take.
They do take a while. I'm going to rabbit hole this for a minute. You know how you oftentimes point out what a gentleman John Martellaro is, mm-hmm. and you're saying that as a contrast to yourself.
Yes,
you sir are also a gentleman. Here we have a longtime critic of yours, yet you respect them. That is a gentlemanly move.
I seldom agree with him, but I respect his opinion. Absolutely. Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm not an unreasonable jerk. I'm just sometimes a jerk. So anyway, all of this is part of why Apple saw an opportunity to disrupt payments with Apple Pay. Apple figured out how to do a token-based system that is, as far as we know, the most secure way to do a transaction on the mm-hmm. planet. Like, no one, to my knowledge, no one has figured out how to hack it, for instance.
Right. I think if someone had hacked the token system that Apple's using, it would be on every news site everywhere.
Yeah, and it should be, because Apple talks about how safe and secure it is.
Right.
So, in the midst of all this, Samsung, who has delusions of relevance, delusions of software relevance in particular, and Samsung just has this dream of being a platform, and they're not a platform. The company's smartphones are not a platform. They're just Android devices. Mm-hmm. That's all they are. They're just I really loathe Samsung. I really do not like this company at all.
Yeah, I totally get that. I am not a Samsung fan at all. But you know, I have to disagree with you on one point. You said that Samsung thinks they're relevant. Samsung is relevant, but in spite of themselves. They're relevant only because they have such a large market share.
Well, but they're not actually relevant. Samsung doesn't matter. Someone's going to have the market share. Samsung happens to have it. And Samsung happens to have it because Samsung gravitated, you know, Samsung throws them in the smartphone world. All right. In most industries that Samsung enters, Samsung's practice is to rip off other people's IP.
Mm-hmm.
And when the company gets sued, the company delays and delays and delays and obfuscates. And then when it loses, which it frequently does, it delays the payment process until it doesn't matter. That market now is either irrelevant or Samsung's position has been secured, because Samsung does do manufacturing really well. There's actually lots of things that Samsung does really well, legitimately well.
Mm-hmm.
And with the smartphone market, Samsung has just thrown a million strands of spaghetti at the walls, and two of them stuck. The first one was that they copied the original iPhone and the look and feel of the iPhone, and they did so deliberately, and that was proven in court. They had a specific and deliberate strategy where internally they said, we have to copy this. These are the things that we need to copy, so let's get these things copied. And they gained a little bit of traction in the smartphone market by first looking like Apple. But when they exploded is when they went to a large screen. They were the first to embrace large screen, and they did it well.
Mm-hmm.
That proved popular with consumers. Big smartphones were a thing. Boom, Samsung's got all the market share. And what few profits Apple didn't snag, Samsung snagged. And but that doesn't make them relevant. It's just they just happen to be the company with share. Samsung could be replaced by any other company,
Other
Android maker. That's why I say they have delusions of relevance.
All right,
you can't replace Apple.
No, you are correct. You cannot replace Apple.
You can't replace Google.
True.
You can't replace Microsoft.
No, that's true.
Right? I mean, those companies, for all of their warts and beauty, salon, I don't know why I'm using the word beauty, for all the good things and bad things about Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple,
Amazon,
right? For all of their good points and bad points, you can't really just replace any of them. They're all relevant in the things that they do. Samsung is not relevant. Samsung is there, you know, all right, so getting a little tense.
Do you need to stop? Do you need to install WatchOS 3 so that you can take a moment and breathe?
Point at the Samsung doll where it hurt you. all right, so into these delusions of relevance, Samsung, which sells smartphones running Android, Samsung feels like it needs to offer its own services that compete with Android.
Which is so Samsung.
Yep. Including having a payment platform, because I don't even get it.
All right, actually I do get it, and it's because Samsung wants to be seen as a platform, and you are correct, they are not. They are a third-party device manufacturer that has chosen to use Google's Android operating system like every other third-party device maker out there.
Of course, any day now, they're going to explode in the market with Tizen.
Yeah.
Any day now.
Any day now, yeah.
Any day now, Tizen's going to be the all-important and stuff.
So, there you go. But until that day happens, they need something that differentiates their commodity Android phone from everyone else's commodity Android phone. And that's why they're doing their own apps and
their own interface layers.
Yeah, their own skin and now their own
services that duplicate often not as well Android services.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is what they're doing to differentiate their Android devices from everyone else's.
Yeah, and they still don't matter. And that's the thing. That's the thing. That's the thing that makes me cranky. They still don't matter. And
I had not picked up on you being cranky.
Yeah, huh. I know. I've been keeping that under wraps.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like being on a show with a Vulcan. No, wait, that's John.
That's John, yeah. So getting back to Stripe readers and chip and sign and chip and pen and chip and slowness, whatever. Samsung decided that they could make everybody embrace Samsung Pay by allowing Samsung Pay to work with magnetic Stripe readers.
So basically what they did, because they have not installed a magnetic Stripe onto their phones, they figured a way.
Rub the phone through the card reader.
I want to see someone try. So what they had to do then was essentially hack the system so they could trick a card reader into thinking a card was being swiped through.
That's too dismissive even for me. Because what they're doing is they're having the devices that support this generate a magnetic field that interacts with the card reader, with the Stripe reader.
Oh, I thought it worked with all card readers. I misunderstood. Yeah,
all the Stripe readers. Yeah.
Yeah. So
where are we?
Oh, I misunderstood then. I thought that you were implying that you needed to have a special type of magnetic card reader that would understand what the Samsung phone is doing.
But no, are you playing straight man?
You had me very confused for a minute.
Well, I could have sworn you were the one who originally explained this to me months ago.
Yeah, but what you were describing wasn't sounding like what I described.
Oh, I see. Right. So it'll interact with legacy magnetic Stripe readers by generating a magnetic field that the magnetic Stripe reader kind of assumes is a magnetic Stripe being run through the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. You got it. That's how it works.
And that magnetic field that they're generating includes all the transaction information, including a one-time use token.
So since they're generating a magnetic field that containing this data, if you are close enough to that magnetic field, you can collect that data as well.
Correct. Well, you can intercept the field. Now, theoretically, if it was encrypted properly, you wouldn't necessarily be able to do anything with it. But it turns out that that's not the case. But I want to emphasize this point here. Magnetic Stripes are on their way out the door. Are magnetic Stripes being slower to be replaced in Asia and or Africa?
I don't
and
know.
And or South America?
Because
there's money
sure.
involved there, right? I mean, this move to chip and pin, it started in Europe and then came to the States. It takes money and infrastructure to make that kind of change take place, just like it takes money and infrastructure to make contactless systems possible, like NFC-based systems.
Right.
So maybe that's one. That would actually be a little less crazy. Chapman's razor.
So yeah, so if that is the case, okay, well then there you go, Chapman's razor.
Nonetheless, Samsung thought that the way they could make Samsung Pay cool is to have it work contactless with legacy Stripe magnetic Stripe readers. And that to me seems like why why bother? Why bother trying to make your new thing work with the legacy systems that are on their way out the door? And even if they're not on their way out the door as fast in Asia or emerging markets or other parts of the world, they will be out the door because no credit card companies are going to issue credit cards with magnetic stripes sooner rather than later.
Sure.
It's going to happen. So it just seems so utterly pointless to me. But they did it. And these what these researchers demonstrated at DEF CON, which is a hacker get-together, is the ability to have a device read that magnetic field and then grab the one-time transaction token that's generated. That's why this is supposed to be secure, by the way. That's the security thing that, you know, Apple Pay and Samsung Pay are theoretically bringing to the table is each transaction uses this one-time token that even if the bad guys get it, they can't do anything with it because it's been used.
Theoretically. Right. Theoretically.
But what these researchers demonstrated is the ability to use this token somewhere else. So they intercept the token. The guy had a device strapped to his arm. And with it strapped to his arm, I don't know how close he got it to the reader. I didn't see this. I was only able to read about it. And I'm sure that they had a specialized setup, but that's the way exploits are always demonstrated is with some kind of specialized situation. It's, you know, then at some point can become weaponized by the bad guys.
Right.
Or even
events like this, what they're doing in most cases is showing a proof of concept.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. So they had the device strapped to his arm and it captured data from the transaction generation process with Samsung Pay, sent the transaction token to Mexico and had someone in Mexico use it to make a transaction. Now, this is only possible if the token hasn't already been used, which is certainly going to be a rare incident. Like it would require the transaction to be canceled, for instance, or to somehow be completed before the transaction was completed at the point of sale.
Okay, so but still now that this has been demonstrated and Samsung is aware of it, surely they're on it and they're going to work on patching this security hole.
No, not at all. Samsung issued a statement here's the first mind-boggling aspect of this. Samsung issued a statement on its security blog denying that the hack was accurate. Basically, they said that the Samsung Pay doesn't use the algorithm that was claimed at DEF CON, despite the fact that the guys at DEF CON actually did it.
Right. And actually completed a transaction.
Yeah, right. So despite all that, Samsung said nah, bro. it ain't that way. And with this statement came an accompanying fact, a set of frequently asked questions. When you issue a statement and you have to issue a fact with your statement, you're doing something wrong. I mean, that just boggles my mind. You issue a statement and the statement's got a fact? Frequently asked questions on this statement may be found here. Laura LeMay would be appalled by that, by the way. And then you go to, you click to here, and it is a two-page PDF with two pages in a paragraph. Single spaced PDF with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points clarifying the rather sparse statement. I don't even get so if, a fact. Go ahead. Sorry.
You poor man. I hope you're sitting down. Anyhow, if you have
staring at that doll is what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm sure you're just pointing everywhere. If you issue a statement to clarify something and then have to include with it 2+ pages of clarification for your clarification, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you're just doing it. You're just doing it wrong. So, and then the best thing is that there's a note at the very bottom. There's a note to go with the, so there's a note, there's a footnote to the fact, to the statement.
Okay. Are you sure this wasn't done by the Vogons? Because it really sounds like it.
The note says, quote, this, mind you, they've already denied that. They've already said that the DEFCON people got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's the note, though. This skimming attack model has been a known issue. That, you know, the one that they said that the DEFCON people couldn't do?
Right.
After they did it.
And now they're saying it's a known issue.
It's a known issue. Reviewed by the card networks and Samsung Pay and our partners. Oh, I see. They need punctuation saves lives. Let's eat, grandmother. has been a known issue reviewed by the card networks, comma, and Samsung Pay and our partners deemed this potential risk acceptable given the extremely low likelihood of a successful token relay attack.
Okay, so just to make sure I've got this straight, Samsung says that the hack that was demonstrated isn't right and they can't do it. Then they issue a very convoluted series of statements to clarify the whole thing, wrapping it up with a footnote saying, oh, and by the way, they actually can do it, even though we said they can't, but we don't think anyone can do it often enough for us to worry about it.
Right. So the card networks and issuers also run their fraud prevention algorithms on all payment attempts, including Samsung Pay. This serves as another layer of protection against token relay.
Well, then what about the transaction that was done in Mexico as part of the demonstration? You'd think that would be picked up by their algorithms.
Well, to Samsung's point, mm-hmm. This is difficult to do. I mean, it's a one-time token. It's a one-time use token. Mm-hmm. So you would have to I think one of the examples that they used, or maybe this was someone like The Verge wrote about it, saying that like you'd have to trick a consumer into canceling a transaction after the token was captured.
Okay.
Or, you know, I guess cause a transaction to be canceled. But to me, well, okay, so to Samsung's point, it is hard to do, at least right now. But it's not impossible to do. And to be so blithe about it, just calling it an acceptable risk, to me, sounds incredibly blithe.
I will add to that, it's dismissive and a little myopic.
And insulting.
There you go. It's insulting. It certainly doesn't instill any faith in me in their payment system.
No, none at all. And but then what I think about, and don't get me wrong, I'm not a hacker. I'm not an engineer. Maybe what I'm about to say is a product only of my own ignorance. It's always possible. I've kind of made a career of that so far, right? And
it's worked out so far.
If this were weaponized and automated, it seems to me that it would be possible for the bad guys to get to a point where they could, rather than having to worry about a transaction being canceled, they could actually do automated purchases before the transaction completed.
Oh, sure. That makes sense.
Like, for instance, imagine a device that intercepted the information and it didn't email the number to a designated address, which is what the proof of concept did. Mm-hmm. But instead had the ability to conduct a transaction itself.
Sure. You could have a bunch of transactions stacked up, ready to go. And now you're just waiting for those tokens to get snatched up. And then you drop it in, automated, that transaction completes. The person that's trying to conduct a legitimate transaction then finds that there's...
Yeah, it doesn't go through. So, oh, do it again.
Yeah, so you do it again.
Yeah, you do it again. And, you know, if I was the bad guys, I'd probably actually want to... Well, first of all, you'd want to... you'd want to have these, you know, just like people have installed skimmers mm-hmm. in grocery stores or in, I don't think they did skimmers in Target, but there have been the skimmer attacks are quite common.
Yes.
So on the same scale, of course, the idea of a skimmer attack is to actually just collect all the credit card data and be able to sell that or use it repeatedly or whatever.
Right.
Now you can't do that with these one-time transaction tokens. But what seems to me what you could do is you could set one of these up, and they're small enough. The guy was wearing it on his arm. They're small enough that they could be hidden inside a point of sale terminal next to a card reader, mm-hmm. stuck in the counter, you know, taped underneath the counter or something like that. Whatever, and they could make transactions small enough and perhaps even random enough to avoid notice by most consumers and even fraud detection.
Sure.
Right? You make $3.79 purchases or, you know, 99-cent purchases or $5 purchases and you know, all going to some kind of shell company or some, you know, there are all kinds of ways to launder money in that way, right? And, sure. And that at that point, it's an issue. This is something that could be used to fleece a little bit of money from a lot of people.
And that would be a very efficient way to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. And Wob95, whom I love dearly, just always has insightful comments. Mm-hmm. You had found he wrote a very long post that's quite entertaining, but you had found a particular line you liked.
I did, and hold on, I can bring that back up and share it with people because it is truly wonderful.
Well, you dallied like a pro there.
Thank you. Okay,
temporized. You temporized like a pro.
Thank you. So, this is his take on Samsung's comment that, hey, this is hard, so don't worry about it, bro. And he says, quote, yeah, it would be hard. And as we all know, bad guys just don't do hard. They go for the easy stuff. I mean, it's not like they'd ever remotely take over your computer, slave it to a network and conduct a global denial of service attack, or hack into professional grade secure banks and uber secure government agencies, or eavesdrop and spy on you from your devices or stuff. Those are just unemployed geeks and hacktivists, not bad guys, because, read my lips, bad guys don't do hard stuff, okay? End quote.
Yeah, and that is, yeah, that's exactly the thing. You know, I guess there is some good news here.
And what's that?
That Stripe readers are going to go away, and this won't be possible.
Sure, but here's me raining on that just a little bit. If Samsung is this cavalier about this threat, what other potential threats to their contactless transaction systems are out there that they don't care about?
Well, there was something at Black Hat, a different hacker conference, about something along the lines of how Samsung Pay works in airplane mode.
Oh, meaning okay.
That even the NFC based systems are. It's that there's the possibility of fraud there too.
So, someone that's very clever could figure out a way to set up a transaction processing system on an airplane. You know, just bring it on board with them in their pocket, and
well, those or tokens. Just I mean, I think the real issue is that if Samsung Pay will work in airplane mode, then that means that some aspects of a transaction are not being authenticated.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that part.
I think that's what that means. I'm not an engineer or a hacker, and I didn't dive too deeply into the scant material that was posted at the Black Hat site.
Oh, that's a problem. And so if parts are not being authenticated, yeah, that's a real problem. If they are being authenticated, then that means that the Samsung phones aren't really going into airplane mode, but going into a mode that appears as if it's airplane mode.
And so I think what would happen is that if a token could be intercepted while the device is in airplane mode, mm-hmm. then it's not the it's one time use isn't going to be that's what's not going to be authenticated.
That's a good time to snag those tokens.
Yeah, that would be a good time to snag those. Token. So, I mean, I don't know. I just Samsung. Did you see this other thing?
Oh, the thing.
Could I be vaguer?
You could, but you don't need to. You could have been vaguer if you just stopped Samsung, and left it at that. I would have been, I know, and carried on with the other thing because.
Or if we didn't have a pre-show meeting where we decided what we were going to talk about.
There's that too, yes. So Brian, what's this other vagueness that you're alluding to that's not really vague that has you so hot and bothered?
So after Apple Watch was announced, I mean, we all know that Samsung beat Apple to market with a modern smartwatch. Uh-huh. Right. They were desperate to do so.
Just yeah.
Desperate to do so.
Do you remember the ads?
I remember
the creepy ads. Stalker ads.
Yeah. Hey, look where I filmed you without your permission. It's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. Let's go back to my hotel room and get naughty.
Samsung. Yeah, we're talking about the Galaxy Gear, I guess, is what that thing was called. And it was just so funny because we didn't find anything out about Galaxy Gear until after... sometime after it was quite rumored that and well known that Apple was working on some kind of smartwatch.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny.
And Samsung just rushed this thing out to market, and it was a piece of junk, and you know, and it remains a piece of junk. So one of the things that Samsung did after Apple Watch came out was to come up with the idea of replaceable bands. Clever, huh?
Yeah.
I wonder where they got that idea.
I don't know. I have never, ever encountered that before, ever in my whole life.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, don't get me wrong. That's not like Samsung shouldn't be taken to court for coming up with the their own way of doing a magnetic release strap.
Sure.
No, by no means. I mean, because that's. I mean, that's I mean,
that is the sort of thing that you would want to patent. You've come up with a new way to do that magnetic latch thing. You patent it.
Right. And that's a lot different to me. It's just so different than making your device look like Apple's device.
OK.
Like physically making it look like Apple's device.
So Samsung patenting their watch bands. I'm not having a problem with this. Why, Brian, are you so apoplectic about this?
So anyway, they came up with this with their own method of doing a magnetic release smart watch strap interchangeable thing. And the images that they included in the patent filing are images of an Apple Watch. They're just Apple Watch images. I mean, it's just like I assume they actually came from an Apple patent.
No, Brian.
But I don't know. I didn't see an Apple patent where these things came from, but they're drawings of an Apple Watch, not kind of an Apple Watch. They're drawings of an Apple Watch.
Now, sometimes vague drawings can make you think that you're looking at something other than what you're really looking at. So
yeah, matrixing, right? You know, we see what we want to see. We see what we know.
Right. So clearly that must have been what happened here.
No, these are drawings of an Apple Watch. I mean, and they're probably Apple drawings. Are you kidding me? It's just, I don't even know what that, what do you do with that?
I don't know. And
it's a bunch of them.
And I have to apologize to you, Brian, because I was totally goading you into,
of course,
into this froth state that you're in.
Yeah, I think our listeners know that.
Okay. But no, I was, shall we say, quite taken aback when I saw the drawings, because like you said, they are drawings of an Apple Watch, and it's not actual vague. Actual
Apple Watch.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you got the digital crown, you've got the shape, you see it from the side. You see underneath the back where Apple's got the round sensor thingy where for charging and for reading your
vitals.
Your vitals, right? I mean, which the Samsung devices don't even have. They don't look like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these drawings are very Apple, obviously an Apple Watch. They're not even stylized. They look to me like someone took CAD renderings for an Apple Watch.
Or patent filing images for an Apple Watch.
And then just dropped them into the Samsung patent filing.
Yeah, and you've got the articulated leather strap that folds back on itself.
Yeah, the leather loop.
The leather loop, right. There's one of those from the side. There is the Milanese thing with the magnetic clasp. You see that too.
Okay.
You see Apple's buckles. You see, I mean, these probably came from an Apple. It's just unbelievable to me. This company is Samsung is unbelievably craptacular.
Well, one thing to keep in mind, Brian, is that Samsung gets away with it over and over. So, what incentive do they have to change?
No, none. None. People. I won't buy anything from them. Having learned about all the things they did, not just Apple, but having learned about all the people that they have ripped off in the past from their own intellectual property, I will not buy a Samsung product, not knowingly. Although, you know, quite frankly, I have Apple devices that have Samsung components in them.
Yes, you do.
And there are probably other devices I have that have Samsung components in them. So. But I won't knowingly buy something that's branded Samsung.
Yeah, the big problem with avoiding Samsung products, if you want to intentionally avoid them, is that you pretty much can't, because they are such a big company and they make so many things.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend that I have Samsung completely out of my life. Where I have a choice, I'm not going to give them any business because they're just craptacular. And they have no compunction about anything. I don't know if I'm using that compunction correctly.
I don't even care if you're using it correctly. It just sounds awesome the way you used it.
Thank you. So like it was so patently Apple is the site that came up with these patent filings. We'll have a link to our mention of it in the show notes, and that'll link to, you can see all the drawings if you click through to Patently Apple. They definitely get the credit for having uncovered this
and for pushing you to the brink of aneurysm.
Yes, apoplexia. I don't think that's a word either.
It is today.
But I like it. It is today. I like that. Apoplexia. I've got a bad case of apoplexia.
Yeah. Wasn't that a Rod Stewart song?
No.
Oh, I mix those guys up all the time.
Show me on the Samsung doll where it gave you apoplexia.
It was right there, Brian.
All right, let's talk about, did we have a third topic? Is it better?
That was, oh yeah, we do have a third topic. Yeah.
Is it better though?
Yes, it's hopefully not going to make you apoplectic. Apple is, no, let me start that sentence over again. The reason that we have,
That thing.
Yeah, that thing. And there you go. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. The reason we have public betas for iOS and OS X, or now Mac OS, is because we got Maps from Apple. And it was such a debacle that Apple totally rethought how they handle their beta program and opened it up to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's go back to 2012.
Right.
Apple Maps is rolled out. And it's presented to us as the bee's knees.
And if you were staying only in Cupertino, it pretty much was. All right. So it was the bee's ankles, the bee's shins.
There was a lot to like about Apple Maps, but it was riddled with problems. And the real issue is that, it was presented as being good to go. It was done. It was beautiful. It was the most awesome map thing ever. And not only that, but Apple overnight replaced Google Maps with their own mapping service.
Right. And that turned into just a huge mess.
Yeah, it did. And Scott Forstall, who was head of software at the time, right? iOS and OS X?
I believe both.
He'd been promoted up, I think, to all of the softwares. He was asked by Tim to apologize. This is the story that we got at the time, at least, or a few weeks later.
Right. And Scott said, nope, not going to happen.
Yeah, Scott said he wasn't going to apologize. We don't have the details of that. But Tim Cook had issued a letter of apology. Like, we're sorry that we botched this. And in fact, please note that there are all these other mapping services in iOS. Here's links to them. Please feel free to use them if you want to.
Right. And then I think he turned to Scott and said, my friend, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yeah. Or some variation on that. And Scott Forstall was ousted, which is, you know, Scott Forstall is a very talented individual.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, in many ways that was a bit of a blow, but Tim Cook was kind of drawing a line in the sand. That's actually probably, that was probably a significant moment for Apple really becoming Tim Cook's Apple.
Yeah. When Tim was willing to step up and deal with the problem and admit that there was a problem, It was pretty clear that he was the guy that could run the company.
Right. So I have another idea, though.
Okay.
What if that was also the time when Tim Cook said, this is ridiculous, we're going to do a beta program for this stuff? And what if Scott Forstall said, no, we're not going to do betas, public betas for companies like Microsoft and Google? This is 100% speculation on my part.
You know, I could see where, if that was how it was playing out, and Tim said, no, this is what we're going to do, and Scott came back with a line along the lines of, I will not stand for that. I will not be a part of it. And if you do this, I will leave. Or something to that effect.
Yes, it's something to that effect, sure.
And then Tim says, fine. And Scott says, well, I'm not really going to leave. And Tim says, actually, yeah, you are.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know. We have no idea how it had happened. What came out at the time is that it was all about the apology. And we don't know the time frame of when Apple decided to do a beta program. But according to a story by Rick Tetzeli, who is the co-author of Becoming Steve Jobs, mm-hmm. along with Brent... both these people. I mean, they're such Brent Schlender.
Oh, okay.
It's Brent Schlender and Rick Tetzeli are the two authors of Becoming Steve Jobs. They're both longtime technology journalists, mm-hmm. and they both covered Silicon Valley and Apple for a very long time, for decades, going back to, you know, long before Steve Jobs left. Steve Jobs left Apple after having been ousted from his authority. That's probably the best way to put that, right?
Sure. Or you could say they were covering Apple since before Steve founded Next.
Yeah, that's another way of putting it. So Mr. Tetzeli was given access to Tim Cook and Eddie Q and Craig Federighi. It seemed like probably over the course of several meetings. And he wrote a piece for Fast Company based on those meetings. And it's a great piece. He's a wonderful writer.
It is a really great piece.
Great journalist. If you like Apple, if you're interested in Apple, you should go and read the full thing. Now, I put together some thoughts on what I thought was some of the standout stuff, including Apple supposedly being very interested in a big bet in healthcare and being part of our strategy is to, this is from Tim Cook, our strategy is to help you in every part of your life that we can, whether you're sitting in the living room, on your desktop, on your phone, or in your car. But also in there was a bit about how the Apple Maps rollout led to having beta programs for iOS and OS X.
Yeah, it turns out that the Maps rollout was a big eye-opener for Apple, and that's when they discovered that their pool of beta testers wasn't nearly as large as they needed to really adequately test a lot of the services that they wanted to offer, and in this case, Maps.
That's where the line about if you're living in Cupertino, Apple Maps was just fine. Right. That's because that's where everyone
that's where the testers were. Yeah.
That's where they were working, and many of them were living. It's interesting, and it's such a peek behind the scenes too. You know, Tim Cook has really opened up Apple since Steve Jobs passed away.
Oh yeah,
and this article is just is just the most recent example of how people are being given looks at, you know, kind of sort of like how Apple works and you know how a lot of the things that we like about the company came to be.
It's really fascinating. And, you know, I'm liking Tim Cook's Apple.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed Steve Jobs' Apple, and it was an Apple we desperately needed. Otherwise, you and I wouldn't be talking about this today. And I was sad to see Steve's era end, but I'm totally fine with Tim's era. I think that he's making Apple his own company, and that's exactly what he needs to do.
It's really too bad that we don't get the both of them, that we don't get Steve's vision with Tim's execution. But I think that, you know, Steve Jobs' vision was often about products and the way we interacted with those products. Mm-hmm. And Tim Cook does have a vision. I don't think many of us have acknowledged this enough. Tim Cook has vision, but it's not the same kind of vision that Steve Jobs had. And I think that where Tim's vision is in what kind of company Apple can be and what kind of
where, it.
words right on the tip of my tongue. Like this notion about Apple being involved in, you know, every part of our lives that Apple can be, that is a different kind of vision.
Than
Steve's. And don't get me wrong, I want a new Mac Pro. I want to see a new Mac Pro in the market. I want the MacBook Pros to be updated, for goodness sake.
Oh, me too.
Right? I mean, it's been more than a year. It's been 441 days or some nonsense like that.
Something like that. And if you look back far enough so that you're not seeing just these minor iterative changes, like basically processor bumps, mm-hmm. you have to go back 4 years.
Yeah. These are aspects of Apple that I want to improve. I want to see improve absolutely and positively.
Well, me too. And
but yeah. Tim Cook does have a vision. It's just a different kind of vision. And it's there are so many good aspects of that are exciting, even though there's these other sections, especially in the Mac department, that I want to see change.
Yeah, well, hopefully those changes will come.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a new MacBook Pro this fall. Please, Apple, because I really need to get a new MacBook Pro.
We'll get something this fall. I thought we'd see it in July.
I was ready for it.
WWDC.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
No, and it's not going to happen in September, according to Mark Gurman.
Which, on one hand, surprises me, and on the other hand, doesn't. September, Apple's just going to keep the focus on the iPhone. So maybe October? That'd be nice, because, man, I really need to get a new laptop. But I can't justify buying one, because it's not enough of a change for my 2012 MacBook Pro.
Yep.
Aren't I just fickle?
Yeah, well, you know, I call myself a high maintenance princess. You're one too, just not quite as much as me.
So, you're a high maintenance princess. I'm a medium maintenance princess.
Yeah, that'll work. I like okay. that. Let's go with that.
Okay, we can go with that. We should probably wrap up right there because now we've established our princess state. All right.
Yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
You can find us on Twitter at Context Machine. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom Recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Only thing better than my weird denunciation was the long delay before you started the music.